The JISC e-learning show, podcast special. Sandra Winfield is project manager at the Centre for International E-Portfolio Development at Nottingham University. She started out by telling me about the project she was working on.
We've got a very successful pilot running with a group of plumbers who are using their e-portfolio again as an information advice and guidance tool almost. There's a big push to upskill plumbers, the plumbing workforce. There's a lot of plumbers around who are jobbing plumbers. And increasingly, they're being asked to provide some sort of credential. And one of the Lifelong Learning Network's projects is getting plumbers to use to evidence their learning and try and get them up to level two and then point them towards level three.
That's interesting. So, I mean, a lot of the case studies I've seen say that there are still technical barriers, that the e-portfolios are too hard to use.
Yes, and this is one of the issues that we've come across. What we've done is built a front end on the e-portfolio which holds their hand. And what it's done is broken down all the skills and all the competencies that they need for level two, and given them examples of what sort of thing that might be. And then that's linked to an e-portfolio at the back end where they can actually store their evidence. And what's actually happening is that plumbers are looking at it and discovering that in fact they've got a lot of these skills already. Because the examples are there and because it's been broken down into small steps for them, and very specifically because it's being expressed in language they understand. And we're finding increasingly that one of the big barriers for work-based learners is this difference in language between learning institutions and employers, and indeed the people themselves. So a lot of these plumbers will look at a list of competencies that come out of an NVQ qualification and just be blank. But if you can break it down and express it to them in terms of, well, okay, what this means is you can change a washer on a tap, they then realize that they've got most of these skills already, and the APL process to get them to the point where they've almost got their level two becomes much more straightforward.
So the question is that we express things in terms of educational competences almost, whilst they express things in terms of work-based tasks.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we're going to be looking at in our new project, which is called Samson. But Samson is actually going to be doing some ontology work as well, looking at bridging that gap between the sort of competency terms that the university uses and the sort of competency terms that employers use. And we are going to do some specific ontology work looking at trying to map those so that the language that you get out of the system will depend on the point at which you go into it. So if you're an employer going in, you'll get one view, one set of language. If you're an academic going in, you'll get another set of language. If you're a student going in, you'll get another set of language, but it will all map to the same basic concepts. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to work, but that's the idea behind the project.
No, that's a really interesting approach. I mean, one of the problems which has been raised in other interviews I've done around work-based learning is that the APL process is far too complex, and that in fact really it takes just as long as doing a course.
Yes, and that's a very real issue. And there are also big problems around QA with APL as well. So you can get people to produce evidence, but the bit that takes time is measuring things that are enormously different against some sort of common standard.
What's the other issues you've hit with the work-based learning?
They need a lot of support, I think, and one of the things that's become very clear to us is that, and this is probably no news to the rest of the world, is that you can't just give them a load of electronic tools and let them get on with it. They do need a lot of hand-holding, a lot of reassurance, and they need things breaking down into relatively small, straightforward steps, and everything needs to be relevant. I think one of the issues for work-based learners and possibly for vocational courses as a whole rather than more traditional academic courses is that everything needs to relate back to the real world, and it needs to relate back to their actual workplace competencies. And if employers are paying for their staff to undertake some sort of training or education, they're expecting results that are tangible and relevant to the work that they do. And that's quite a big challenge for, well, certainly for us as a research-based university, where we're interested in, or we have a lot of experience of doing more blue skies type stuff. So it's bringing us back down to earth a lot more.
And I suppose the issue is, who is providing that support in your projects?
For the Lifelong Learning Network, there's a whole set of there's a whole support structure that's in place that's being run by other bits of the Lifelong Learning Network. So what we're doing is encouraging and enhancing what's there already. We're not actually looking at putting it in ourselves. So what we're doing is the electronic support that we're offering is looking at adding value. And that's very much the one of the conclusions we came to through the Joseph project. We'd started off thinking, well, this is great. We're going to provide lots of nice web-based information, advice and guidance for resources. And learners can go away and they can DIY IAG. And that became very clearly, well, there may be some people for who that works for, and there may be some people who actually, especially teenage boys, who might use this as an excuse to avoid face-to-face interaction. But it's very much got to enhance what's there already. So we're not adding, we're adding value rather than putting new structures into place.
Let's talk about information, advice and guidance, because quite clearly with the recession and with the government commitment to everybody having access or right to access for to information, advice and guidance, there's going to be a lot of interest in how we can use technology to support that process. What's your feelings?
I think it can't be done without using technology. It's one of the things that we've seen very clearly with the expansion of the apprenticeship program. It's very clear that the enormous number of new apprentices who are being guaranteed places can't be supported by the existing structure. And there isn't, while there's a lot of funding going into the program, we aren't going to suddenly be able to magic the proportion of fully qualified, fully experienced IAG professionals that you would need to provide high level one-to-one or face-to-face experience for all of those apprentices. So technology becomes very, very important.
And then I suppose the big question, how are you going to use that technology?
There are things about the technology. It has to be web-based. It has to be accessible in terms of them actually being people actually physically being able to log in and use stuff, and it has to be understandable and bite-sized, and in fact they have to be given some sort of to some extent people have to be given the ability and the encouragement to go away and experiment with it. And I think that certainly for older work-based learners that is more of an issue. People who are older and scared of computers, young people have grown up in with the ubiquitous computer, they're far more comfortable with technology, although we do still make fundamental assumptions about young people's computer literacy that don't necessarily hold. For older learners, it is much more of an issue, and in fact, part of the changing face of IAG is almost IAG to access IAG. We're going to have to provide more support to actually to access and use and play with and explore the technology.
Now, in the past, we've looked at, and sector skills councils have looked at providing information through websites, but you're going a little further, I think, in trying to use e-portfolios.
Yes, I mean, one of the classic statements that a colleague made to me some time ago about IAG is that there's lots of information, there's a limited amount of advice, and there's very little guidance. And that's still the case, I think. One of the issues with IAG is that there is heaps of information, an enormous amount of information, of variable quality and variable use. One of the things that we see in IAG-focused technology as being useful for doing is to focus learners on the useful resources. The classic example of 14-year-olds going away and typing engineering into Google and just getting thousands and or millions of hits and not having any idea which ones are any use. The technology that we're experimenting with the advice tool that we started to build as part of our Joseph project is run at a higher level by IAG staff, so that they can quality assure the links that come through it. And so there's some sort of guidance almost in the information that's coming through, if that's clear.
No, that's very clear, yes. So it's a quality tool to filter, almost, using human intelligence to filter the wealth of hits you would get on a web search.
That's right, and it's very important that it continues to be monitored so that it grows and develops and is in the hands of people who are aware of what's out there and what the new stuff is out there. It needs to be constantly updated, and that is an issue that it needs to be owned and managed. And what we've done with the Joseph IAG tool that we've built is made sure that there's a CMS designed in it, so that the people who are looking after it can go in and take stuff out and add new stuff as it becomes appropriate. The other thing that we've started to do with the Joseph tool is link it to an e-portfolio. So it guides the user through a decision-making process. It's aimed very much at looking at new pathways and courses that will need to be followed, and the ultimate aim is that someone comes away being more informed about the sort of decision that they might want to make. And we've done that partly by tying it to their e-portfolio. So the first page of the tool gets them to look at where they are now and what they think they're good at, what they think their skills are, drawing that information out of their e-portfolio. And in fact, if they've got the right sort of e-portfolio, and it's still in a very early stage, but we've got it linked to the passportfolio tool that's in use in Nottingham schools. So if they've got a passportfolio account, Joseph will pre-populate that first page for them and say, well, according to your passportfolio account, these are your interests, these are your skills, these are the things you think you're good at, these are your interests. And then it uses that as a basis to start to guide them through, well, if you're interested in engineering, go away and look at some careers, go away and look at some job descriptions, start to pick out what you think a good engineer will need, what skills are needed, and then map that to what you've got, start to do some gap analysis, and then lead them to look at possible courses. So it's a very structured process, but it's very open-ended from the management point of view, that you can customize it for any level and indeed any area, because at the top end there's a CMS, which means that you can link it to any new set of resources. You can customize the questions, and it then becomes a very powerful and flexible tool. And ultimately we're hoping it will be linked at the moment it works with Passportfolio. We're planning that it will work with other e-portfolio systems as well, to try and help the learners along a bit. It's the same idea as the plumbers, really, that they're not starting from standing. Here is some information that you already have. And in fact, that's a principle that goes through into online applications as well. Online applications linked to ePortfolio. Here's an application form for further education. And here it is pre-populated with some of the stuff that you've already got in your ePortfolio. So it becomes less of a daunting task for a novice individual.
So what we're talking is linking up a series of progression routes and transitions together through the ePortfolio.
Effectively, yes. Yes, and also using the ePortfolio as a stimulus tool, so that someone who says, I couldn't possibly do that, can then go back to their ePortfolio and be shown, well, actually, yes, you can, because you've already got this, and you've already got this, and you've already got this, and look, if you take this from here, you're halfway there.
Well, it sounds extremely interesting. And what would you say are the biggest issues you face with all your work here?
Well, one is the reliability of technology. yes, I mean it's the embarrassing when the computer freezes and it dies. Sustaining things beyond short term programs. I mean I think this is an issue for all project work, really. It's that sustainability once the initial interest in project funding has finished. It's giving something, and this has been the big success of Joseph, that's been taken on by the local connections service, who are actually building it into the offering that they're going to offer to all the Nottinghamshire schools. So it's keeping the impetus going, so that you don't then end up going back to the beginning again, or if not back to the beginning, sort of taking two steps back every time you go into a new project.
So there's continuity issues, and I guess that's an issue, yes, really, for funding bodies in seeking to see how we can build continuity and progress.
Yes, and I know that is a big issue for JISC at the moment. And I think that's continuity is part of that. It's realizing it's not just realizing immediate benefits, it's realizing continuing benefits and empowering people to actually take stuff on and take ownership of it once the initial project is finished. And having, well, finding a way of maintaining some sort of minimal input to and guidance and almost a help desk for when they get stuck, but actually being letting people go away and take stuff on and continue to develop it and use it, rather than giving them something static that's, you know, here we are, this is what we built, this is what we've finished, here you are, you can have this now, and 6 months down the line, well, it's starting to fray at the edges and it's not quite as shiny and useful as it was before.
And I guess there's an issue around professional development for staff. For instance, if we're talking about careers or we're talking about university admissions, there is an issue in these new ways we're working.
Yes, and in keeping up to date with new ideas in technology. And we talk a lot about Web 2 in project work, about Web 2 and formal and informal learning. But again, we make a lot of assumptions about what people are using. And while there is a very high proportion of individuals who are using lots and lots of different tools and lots of bits of mix and match technology, there's also a lot of people who aren't and find it faintly frightening, or have a tendency to find a tool they like and cling to it and use it regardless of whether it's suitable for what they're trying to do with it.
The JISC e-learning show is a Pontedusky production for JISC. It was introduced by Graham Atwell and produced by Dirk Stieglitz. The e-learning show is licensed under by attribution, non-commercial, share alike Creative Commons license.